Welcome to Fisherwomen. I'm Katie Osborne. Today we begin with a journey back in time, to an era before humans and before dinosaurs, to the age of the fishes, the Devonian. Plants and animals are beginning to venture onto land, from ferns and horsetails to arthropods and early amphibians. Underwater, there is a vast diversity of fishes. Prehistoric sharks and great armored fish called placoderms dominate the deep and share these waters with lamprey. The age of the fishes ended 375 million years ago, with the mass extinction event that marked the end of the Devonian. But lamprey lived on, and went on to survive the Permian, Triassic, and KT mass extinction events as well. By the time humans first appeared and started fishing, lamprey had already been around for hundreds of millions of years. So people have fished and enjoyed eating lamprey for as long as there have been people. Lamprey are considered a delicacy in Asia, and before they received protections in Europe, they were a favorite food of the British royal family. On the Pacific coast, lamprey have a long and important cultural history. Here to talk to me about this, along with all things lamprey, is Ralph Lampman, lamprey project biologist for the Yakama Nation. Ralph, thank you so much for joining me today. To start things off, lamprey have been getting more attention lately, but you've been working with them for years. How did you get into lamprey, and what brought you into fisheries more generally?
You know, growing up, I didn't do a lot of fishing, and I was born in San Francisco, California, and then I moved to Tokyo, Japan, you know, right in the middle of the big city, and that really attracted me to the countryside. So I lived in Oregon for a while, and I worked for the Forest Service. I was an intern to be a fish technician, and that really got me interested in the fishery world, and I was able to get a permanent job after a few internships. And when I was doing that work, we had a screw trap, a rotary screw trap, where we collect juvenile fish coming downstream and tended to get a lot of lamprey. And sometimes they would spawn near the screw trap, just upstream. And I felt a connection with them. I think they're charismatic. When you're watching them spawn, they take you to a different world, kind of make you time travel, and you kind of feel like you're seeing a small dinosaur doing its thing, and it made me feel like that there's really amazing creatures that we don't know much about, and I felt like they have a voice that needs to be told and shared, and felt like I could be maybe that person.
Absolutely. Now, some of our listeners may have heard of lamprey in the context of sea lamprey invading the Great Lakes, but in the Pacific Northwest, we face the opposite problem of declining native lamprey populations. Could you talk a little bit about that and what makes lamprey ecologically important in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, so there's definitely Midwesterners that are here, and often they cringe when they talk about lamprey. In the Great Lakes, sea lamprey invaded those lakes, so they're a problem over there. But on the West Coast, they're, you know, native species. They're as native as they can be because they're one of the oldest species. The distribution of salmon and lamprey are really similar. You know, wherever salmon went, lamprey were there, and vice versa. And I think they really depended on each other. You know, the salmon, they hatch in the spring, summer, and that's when lamprey are spawning and leaving behind their carcasses, and that's a lot of ocean-derived nutrients that are being dropped off. And like I said, it's really high in calorie and becomes a food source for those, you know, newly hatched salmon fry. And lamprey would also in the ocean feed on salmon. They focus mostly on the deep water, so they're more feeding more on the Pacific hake or halibut or sole species or cod species, but they'll definitely come across salmon as well. Lamprey themselves provide a lot of food source for, you know, predators that are out there, especially salmon predators, you know, sea lions, and a lot of the bird species, seagulls, cormorants, all those species that focus and feed heavily on salmon, they actually feed a lot on lamprey. You know, they're slow swimming species, they're easy targets. So if we had more lamprey available, that can help buffer the predation that we're seeing, you know, on salmon, which is, there's a lot of pressure on salmon from all these predators, native or invasive. And so if we had more lamprey, we can likely help prevent the high predation that we're seeing with salmon. So I think, you know, if we look at the big picture, you know, lamprey and salmon are really helping each other. And if we want to bring back salmon, really need to bring back all the components that make up the ecosystem, and lamprey, a key species to make that happen.
Those are such excellent points, and not the image most folks have of lamprey. Now, as you've said, lamprey are these ancient creatures. So for the uninitiated, could you please describe the Pacific lamprey?
So lamprey are an ancient fish. They've been around for a long time. You know, estimate is 450 million years. You know, there's fossil records that show that they pretty much stay the same shape and form. So they're not a typical fish. They don't have any bones. They look like a, you know, what a lot of people would call eel. They have a long, skinny shape. The only difference is that they don't have paired fins. So they just have a tail fin and a couple dorsal fins on the top. And then they also don't have a jaw like regular true eels would have. They just have a suction mouth. So they have teeth on the suction mouth. They suck onto surfaces, and they don't really use that when they're in the freshwater for feeding, but in the ocean, they suck onto other fish and feed on the blood and body fluids of other bigger fish that are out there.
Footnote, lamprey are often referred to colloquially as eels, especially on the Pacific coast of North America, where there are no native freshwater eels. In fact, the Eel River in Northern California is actually named for the Pacific lamprey, which are called eels locally. True eels are bony fishes. Just as snakes evolve from lizards, eels are descended from finned fish, and you can see the reduced fins on an eel when you watch them up close. Eels are very cool, and I'll be talking more about them in next week's episode. For now, let's return to lamprey, which, unlike eels, evolved before hard bony skeletons, jaws, and pectoral fins were all the rage, and so lack these traits. Now back to the interview to complete our mental picture of lamprey.
And they don't have any scales like most other fish do, so they're really slimy. It's almost impossible to grab them with your bare hand. You need a cutting glove to get a good grip on them. They're like a giant muscle just moving around.
That's awesome. Pacific lamprey also have a fascinating life cycle. Could you tell the listeners about that?
Similar to salmon, they spawn in freshwater. You know, each female has about 100,000 eggs, so not very many of them need to survive. They spawn there, usually in a similar habitat that salmon spawn. They make a little nest or red, just a little hole in the ground of the stream they make to kind of protect them from flow and their eggs in. They, you know, salmon use their tail to dig a nest, but lamprey use their mouth to kind of move around the rocks. A lot of times they work together, male, female. Like if there's a big rock, they'll just kind of work together to move that rock. And after they get it set up, they do a little dance that's a little different from salmon. You know, salmon just kind of line up along each other and open their mouth and release eggs. But lamprey have a little dance where the male will suck onto the female's head, wrap its tail around the female, and they almost kind of squeeze the eggs out of the female when they wrap the tail around and then do this little dance. So it's really intricate. And once the female releases their eggs that are, you know, gets fertilized, they have about a couple weeks to hatch. They have a yolk sac at the beginning, so they just feed off of that within the red. And when they're ready to feed on their own, they drift downstream. And that's when they look for the slow water habitat that has fine sediment, like silt and sand and clay. They burrow in the sediment, kind of like the worms do in the forest. They just burrow in there to get their feed, and just feeding on things that are breaking down, like detritus, leaves, salmon carcasses, just those nutrients that are in the sediment. It's not really high in calories, so they just grow really slowly for, you know, roughly 7 years. You know, anywhere from 3 to 9 years, there's kind of a wide range. And then they head out, they migrate downstream to the ocean, just like salmon, and they spend a few years there, and then they come back. But they don't necessarily home, they don't necessarily have native homing, so they, like salmon, would often come back to the exact same stream and sometimes the exact same reach. But lamprey, you know, we don't know fully know how they operate, but they can smell the pheromone from the larvae, not necessarily their own, but any pheromone produced by Pacific lamprey, and sometimes even different species. And we think they're smelling that, and if there's a really good pheromone smell coming from a stream, they'll go there because they know that, you know, it's a productive stream for them, and they do their spawning. So they don't necessarily home to the place that they came from.
Footnote, I'd like to take a brief detour to talk about some of the other lamprey we have on the Pacific coast. Western brook lamprey and western river lamprey. River lamprey, like Pacific lamprey, spend their adult years in estuaries and coastal waters before returning to freshwater to spawn. Brook lamprey are the freshwater resident counterpart to river lamprey. As an analogy, brook lamprey are the rainbow trout to river lamprey's steelhead. They are considered a paired species, and despite the two distinct names, they appear to be the same species genetically. So while river lamprey go out to sea and grow to be about a foot long, thanks to ocean host species, brook lamprey spend their entire lives in rivers and streams, reaching adult lengths of roughly 6 inches, about half the size of their anadromous counterparts. By the way, Pacific lamprey reach lengths of up to 3 feet, so they are much larger. The freshwater resident lifestyle of the brook lamprey is so successful that brook lamprey likely evolved from river lamprey several times at various locations in the West during different time periods. In some places, brook lamprey populations have become separated from ocean-going river lamprey, like rainbow trout in an isolated alpine lake. Some of these isolated brook lamprey populations have become genetically distinct. In other places, river and brook lamprey coexist and intermix, and their genomes are indistinguishable. Pacific lamprey appear to favor spawning streams that already have larval lamprey filter feeding in the sediment, whether those larvae are Pacific lamprey, western river lamprey, or western brook lamprey. As all three species live similar lives as larvae, it is believed that larval presence of any of the three species and the pheromones those larvae produce is indicative of favorable rearing habitat. Now, back to the interview and more questions about Pacific lamprey.
We're really trying to understand, you know, their life history. You know, for one, you know, how long they spend as a larvae, how long they spend as a smolt, you know, heading out to the ocean, and how long they spend as adult. The tribes are using genetics to really try to understand that better. So we pick up adult lamprey from lower Columbia River dams, mainly Bonneville, the Dalles and John Day dams. You know, passage rates are pretty low. Give them a ride to upstream habitat. The Umatilla tribe, Nez Perce tribe, Yakima Nation tribe. We have been doing translocation to pick up these fish and release them upstream habitat where they used to be. Part of that process, we collect the genetics from each of those adults that we pick up, so we know which fish we release where. And with that info, we can kind of track their genetics and where they go. And one thing we're finding out is that lamprey spend a long time in the ocean. We used to think that they only spend 2 to 3 years, but now with the parentage genetics information, we see that a lot of them are actually spending 4 to 6 years in the ocean, which is a really long time, even compared with salmon. And we're also learning about, you know, how long they spend as larvae and smolts heading out to the ocean. And so far, we're finding a lot of them are 4 to 5 years old, but they could be anywhere from like 2 to 3 year old all the way to 9 years old when they head out to the ocean. they're really plastic and they seem to be able to adapt to the environment and change your life history based on the needs. And that might be, you know, one reason why they've been able to survive for so long.
Yeah, yeah, that plasticity could definitely help explain why they've survived largely unchanged for hundreds of millions of years. People have also fished for lamprey for a very long time, thousands of years. Could you talk to me about the importance of lamprey to the peoples of the Pacific Northwest?
A lot of the Columbia River tribes, they've really depended on salmon for sure, but also lamprey was an important food source for them. Not just for the Columbia Basin tribes, but really across Pacific Northwest, wherever lamprey were, they have been an important food source. They come in at a little different time than, you know, salmon, and they're probably one of the most nutritious seafood that's out there. They're really high in lipids and fat. So really oily, like if you smoke them or cook them, their oil will just drip out, like crazy amounts of oil will come out of them. And it's all good oil, you know, it's omega-3 and the healthy oil that keeps you healthy. And it's really important for, you know, your brain functions. They're kind of a superfood for the tribes. They consider them medicine. And yeah, they're just really rich in a lot of the vitamins.
Footnote, lamprey are one of the first foods of the indigenous peoples of the Pacific Northwest. First foods are wild food sources, including fish, game, berries, and roots, that native communities have traditionally depended upon not only for their nutritional sustenance, but for their spiritual, cultural, and medicinal values. First foods, such as salmon and lamprey, are traditionally served during first food ceremonies and at funerals. However, there are not always enough fish for these ceremonies today, due to drastic declines in lamprey populations that were historically harvested throughout the Columbia River Basin. It is hoped that by learning more about lamprey and working to improve conditions for their survival, historic harvest sites will become viable once more, and the rich traditions surrounding Pacific lamprey will be secured for present and future generations. Now, back to Ralph to hear more about this historic fishery.
And they would often, like at Salila Falls, it's under the Dallas Dam Reservoir now, but that's where a lot of the tribes would come together, you know, fish for salmon and lamprey, and they would trade goods, and lamprey was a staple for them, like when they're fishing out there for days and weeks, and they would put that over this fire and allow them to work all night, you know, fishing and doing things. They're also more of a daily food, you know, back then when they're more available, and they would call them the Indian hot dogs, and they would actually put them in a hot dog bun and eat them that way. So typically they're smoked or dried, and if they're dried, yeah, they can last a really long time.
I can imagine, and I've seen old photos of the lamprey harvest, and it's just incredible. It's these photos of waterfalls that look like they're just waterfalls of lamprey. Could you talk about that and speak a little bit more to the historic practices for harvesting lamprey?
Salila Falls was, you know, one of the places that the tribes would harvest lamprey, but there are many, many other falls. You know, waterfalls was typically a good place to harvest them because that's where you can see them climbing. You know, they can climb waterfalls that salmon can't because they're not necessarily a good jumper, but they're able to just suck on, and they don't necessarily need a lot of water. They just, when they suck on, the flow kind of goes over their body and then it goes over their gills, so they can, as long as there's just a little bit of water going over, they can breathe and continue to go upstream. So those are good places to harvest them in the U.S. as well as in Japan and in Europe and all the places where they get harvested. You know, you still see a lot of fish. The numbers are fairly high at Willamette Falls. I think there's a attraction to go there. And so that's really the only, you know, one of the few places left that tribes can go to harvest, you know, a decent number of fish every year. So it's an important place for a lot of the tribes.
Yeah, it would have to be. And I'd imagine fishing for lamprey is restricted now that they have declined. Who is allowed to fish for Pacific lamprey, and where can that fishing take place?
Yeah, there are sensitive species in a lot of the states. So Willamette Falls, you can apply for a permit, and the ODF&W can provide those general permits. But really, anywhere else, you're not allowed to use them for bait. In the past, a lot of people would use them for like sturgeon bait or even, you know, smallmouth bass fishing.
Got it. And what's their official conservation status?
So the Pacific lamprey, along with other lamprey species in the area, were petitioned to be listed in 2003. You know, they concluded that there just wasn't enough data, especially historical data, to make that call. There's also lack of info about their population structure. Like, are they just one big population across the whole Pacific Northwest? We just didn't have any info to make the call there. So they weren't listed, but that's when the awareness that, you know, we really need to understand the species better to do more for lamprey.
Right. Okay. So where do we start that work? In your opinion, what are the biggest threats to lamprey today?
Passage, that's an issue for adults and also for larvae. You know, a lot of contaminants and pollution in the water in general, but also those contaminants tend to collect in the fine sediment, you know, where larvae rear and grow, and that's definitely a concern, I think, for lamprey. We're still trying to understand how this affects lamprey. They're definitely really high in a lot of the herbicides and, you know, mercury and some of the legacy chemicals that are in the streams and rivers. There's also, you know, invasive species that are quite abundant in many of the Columbia River streams and rivers, and, you know, that's definitely a concern. You know, but I think there's definitely a lot of momentum going for them.
Yes, I'd agree. And let's build on that momentum and carry it forward by ending with the successes. So much work has been done since the early 2000s to help lamprey, especially by taking simple actions like incorporating considerations for lamprey into the design of restoration projects targeted at salmon, so that those projects benefit a greater share of native fish species. Ralph, what have been some of your great successes with Pacific lamprey?
From translocation, we're really seeing a large increase in the, you know, the juveniles that are heading out. I think we saw about a 30-fold increase, you know, compared to historical numbers. So we were getting like over 7,000 lamprey in our screw traps and our juvenile monitoring facilities that, you know, used to be only, you know, 100 or so fish each year. Adults are also coming back in high numbers. You know, in the lower Yakima River, we used to only get about, you know, 20 fish on average. Our estimated return numbers are about 1,600 fish coming back. So our long-term goal is 35,000. That's what we estimate historically. We're in the Yakima River, Yakima Basin. So we still have a long way to go, but it's really reaffirming to see, you know, the numbers gradually coming back up. And we know that, you know, more juveniles are heading out from the basin, contributing to the population in the ocean. Like I said, you know, they don't home specifically, so the juveniles we produce from the Yakima are not necessarily going to come back to the Yakima, but they're just contributing to that overall big population that's out there. So all the restoration work all over the world really helps lamprey, whether it's in Russia or Japan or Canada. You know, everything that we do is going to be contributing. And so that means that we can't just work on this alone. All of us has to work together, you know, globally to really make a big impact. So hope that, you know, we can, you know, have that strong partnership among agencies and among different countries. It's a, you know, lofty goal and task, but I think as long as we can prove that we can do this locally, like here in the Yakima and Umatilla and, you know, Snake River basins, I think we can, you know, show that we can do this at a larger scale. And if these fish are in trouble, it's really our turn to give them a hand and to see that they're struggling and figure out what we can do to help them.
Well said. Ralph, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your knowledge and the work that you're doing to recover this incredible species. Now, for all of you out there, Ralph has an amazing lamprey rap. So, to wrap things up, he's going to take it away.
I'm a vampire bloodsucker parasite, and many people want us simply out of sight, but we have the right to fight the plight, and hope down the road you'll see the light. We've been around for 450 million years, so stop the smear, and don't you miss here. We were up here long before the dinosaurs appeared. Can't say this without a tear. You know I'm a sucker naturally, but don't you dare judge me. I have a function on this planet. Now can't you try to understand it? We bring back the ocean's rich nutrients to serve our fellow constituents. We need clean water, just like your son and daughter. And who said you can slaughter all my sons and daughters? Live on, yeah. It's the rival, the lamprey revival. Live on, yo. Forget about all this neglect and deprival. Live on, yeah. We deserve our own survival. Live on, yo. Forget about putting us in historical archival. As a juvenile, aka amacete, I don't feed on any meat except for special treat. I filter feed on algae and detritus. Hey, don't you wanna come over and try this? I help digest the stream debris so you can enjoy the clean water carefree. Fish, birds, and animals devour me, but I'm still alive in their poo and pee, you see.
It's a cycle of life,
said Mohammed Gandhi. We add life energy to plants and trees, but as an adult, I'm on the salt. It's the blood and body fluids that give me a jolt. Hopping and hopping, we go Lamprey Express, but we don't always kill in this process. I must confess, there used to be fish in the sea for you and me, yet humans have made a mess. Live on, yeah, it's the arrival of the Lamprey Revival. Live on, yo. Forget about all this neglect and deprival. Live on, yeah. We deserve our own survival. Live on, yo. Forget about putting us in historical archival.
Lamprey need a little bit of rest from this pitiless and human disinterest. I hope you can digest this great manifest, cause this ain't no joke or a jaded jest. Lamprey ain't no newest sensor, unwanted pest. Well, maybe in the Great Lakes, but not here in the West. Now that the fish stocks in the oceans are severely depressed, humans are put to the test. So let's all get dressed, roll up our sleeves, and do our best to make this Lamprey revival a success. Lamprey deserve life, not death. Lamprey deserve life, yo, not death. I said Lamprey deserve life, not death.
I don't want to second guess what happens next, so I won't accept any answers from all of you except for a big, big yes. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Can I get a big yes now for Lamprey survival?
Uh-huh.
Can I get a big yes now for Lamprey revival?
Uh-huh.
Are you gonna do your part to bring the Lamprey back?
Uh-huh.
Are you going to follow your heart to make this a brand new start for the Lamprey family?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
I think we could all agree that that was most excellent. Thank you so much to Ralph Lampman for sharing his love and knowledge of Lamprey, the work that he is doing, and this wonderful Lamprey rap. I also want to thank the Yakima Nation for giving permission for this interview, and thank the many, many people working to help Pacific lamprey in the Columbia River Basin and beyond. Now, you know you want to see the official music video of Ralph's Lamprey rap, and you are in luck. Ralph has entered his music video in this year's Eurofishin film competition. So you can see him deliver his rap on both sides of the Pacific Ocean, in English and in Japanese, and then give his video a vote. You can also stay up to date on Lamprey issues by following the Yakima Nation's Facebook page on Pacific Lamprey. And if you have 10 minutes and want even more, There's two excellent short films on Pacific lamprey and their importance in the Pacific Northwest. Links to all of that listed in the show notes, alongside resources to learn more about lamprey and the work being done to restore this historic fishery. And now it's time for our weekly creature feature. Keeping things totally tubular, this week's creature feature is on parchment worms and comes from MC Hannon, PhD candidate at Texas A&M University.
Have you ever walked across a beach at low tide and noticed tubes protruding from the sediment? It would look like a pair of straws separated by about a foot or so of sand. Maybe you were walking somewhere in San Diego, Brazil, or the northern Gulf of Mexico, where some labs are extensively studying these organisms. If so, you may have been trotting on top of parchment tube worms. These worms are from the species complex Catopterus variopoddatus, and are named so due to the paper-like texture of the sometimes 2 feet long tubes they inhabit. These segmented worms from the phylum Annelida are unique in a few ways. One is in their morphology. Most annelids have repeated segments of similar shape, size, and adornment that make up their body plan. However, parchment worms have a variety of segments, some paddle-like, wing-like, very thickened or tapering at the end, and each kind has their own specific function. To me, they look more like Frankenworms than anything else. And on top of this odd shape, these worms can glow. And I mean like bright bioluminescence. Parchment worms emit this cool blue light from their segments and incorporate it into their mucus. Quite the slippery spectacle. But why? That's the big question right now. Living life in a tube, buried in the sediment, I mean, how often is this luminescent light show scheduled for? The jury's out on this one, with the top theory being some form of self-defense. Picture a predator coming along and attempting to slurp the worm out of the tube. Then a sticky glowing glob covers the face of the attacker. Now it has been marked with this bright signal, making it an easy target for its even bigger predator. More ecological experiments need to be conducted to support this hypothesis. And who knows, it could have evolved without an associated visual cue, just a bright byproduct of some undescribed bodily function. To follow along on upcoming glowworm experiments and get more general worm content than you ever thought you needed, you can follow me on Twitter at @_MC.
Thank you so much, MC, for that wonderful creature feature. If you'd like to follow her on Twitter, follow the links in the show notes. And that's the show. Thank you once again to my wonderful guests, Ralph Lampman and MC Hannon. And thank you for joining me today on Fisherwomen. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave a review. It really helps. If you would like to submit a creature feature for a future episode, please visit the website at fisherwomenpod.wordpress.com or follow the links in the show notes for more information. You can also follow Fisherwomen on social media. It's at fisherwomenpod on Instagram and Twitter. The Fisherwomen theme was mixed by me using sounds sourced from SFX Go, Orange Free Sound, and Free Sound. Cover photo for this episode comes from Ralph Lampman. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to tune in next week when I'll be speaking with Janine Bryan, Vice President of Biological and Environmental Sciences at Woosh Innovations. We'll be talking about salmon passage, measuring fish with computers, and the pros and cons of going viral. Until next week, happy fishing.